The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Quite a month in this country. I don't exactly remember when Hurricane Harvey hit Houston. Month and a half ago. It's like the time has not making sense. So, Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Maria, earthquakes in Mexico, the fire in Santa Rosa, the killings in Las Vegas. How many of you here directly know somebody who's been impacted by these recent events? It kind of struck me this morning. My cousin in Houston had a lake at her front door. I know two people who had to evacuate in Florida. Probably more that I'm unaware of. I know two friends in Florida. I have a friend who has family in Puerto Rico, and a friend who lives in the evacuation zone in Santa Rosa, who's, I don't know whether her house is there or not. It's right in the area where all of the buildings, all of the businesses have burned down. So I'm quite concerned about her, and I have not gotten in touch yet. And so this is a reminder of impermanence, a reminder of this truth, and how easy it is, even when our own families and friends are impacted directly, how easy it is for us to still think of it as there somewhere, as not affecting us. I was kind of amazed this morning driving around. You know, we're all just doing our things here this morning, you know. And, you know, just the reflections, just images in my mind coming of the people who are in evacuation centers and, you know, multiple spaces in this country. People who have lost everything overnight, in a moment. And still, there's a teaching in the Mahabharata, the Indian Hindu epic, that reflects on this kind of amazement, and one of the characters in the Mahabharata. And if you ever get a chance, there's a wonderful telling of the story of the Mahabharata that a film director, Peter Brook, created. There's a 6-hour version which was done in series fashion on PBS, I think. And it's quite a lovely portraying of this story. And one of the characters in the story says, "This, I think, is most wonderful, that the man of the world, even though constantly seeing before his eyes creatures dying and passing away, never for a moment the idea enters, I too have to fall. I too am also a creature destined to be destroyed. Even if it is told to him, it never enters his mind. Only the surface mind understands the language, but the actual sense never goes into his head. That every person must one day die, yet everyone lives as if they were immortal. This is the greatest wonder." I reflect on impermanence quite a bit. Reflect on the fact that this may be my last day on the planet quite often. And yesterday, I was reflecting on putting together an earthquake emergency kit, because all of this is like bringing this to my mind again, you know, again, how how, you know, just to create even something to shelter in place. And one of my friends whose daughter had to evacuate in Florida said that her daughter had convinced her finally to get an earthquake preparedness kit here together. And I was reflecting on that yesterday. And the thought crossed my mind. I've got time. And it's like, wow. You know, even with all of the reflection that I do, there's still this delusion that I have time. That I have time. What time? What time do we have? This illusion of mortality, this illusion of the continuity of our lives. And so I wanted to reflect on, the Buddha talked about impermanence a lot, actually. He often encouraged us to reflect on impermanence. He said to his son, cultivate the perception of impermanence. Partly because the perception, the seeing of impermanence, it's like our minds tend to, they tend to hold on to ideas, concepts, essentially. The holding on to ideas and concepts is one of the main ways that impermanence is obscured. We believe in the reality of our concepts, like the sense of I am, for instance, is one of the most deepest concepts that we have. And that kind of sense that even if it is told, it never enters the mind. One day I too must die. Maybe today. Because the concept I am is strong. The concept of the sense of self is strong. And we believe it. And in that believing, we think, well, that I'm so here, I'm so real. How can I just vanish in a moment? And so it's kind of the belief in concept in a way, that the kind of enduring nature of things that we believe in, not recognizing the actual impermanent nature of experience, and how some of our concepts are just simply concepts. The sense of I am, in fact, can be a useful concept. In fact, all of our concepts are very useful in terms of navigating the world and communicating and understanding what's happening. And yet we misunderstand concepts to be something that they're not. And so the Buddha encouraged his son, he said, cultivate the perception of impermanence. If you cultivate the perception of impermanence regularly, it will help you to understand this illusion, this misperception around the concept, I am. But let's just start with the reflection on impermanence and this turning towards impermanence. And with the reflections, the Buddha encouraged us first. He said, he has this teaching called the five subjects for frequent recollection. The first four are about impermanence. I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. And we can elaborate that. So too are my family of the nature to age. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. So too, my family, my friends, all beings are of the nature to sicken. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. So too, my family, my friends, all beings are of the nature to die. All that I have, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And so these reflections on impermanence, reflecting on this. The Buddha encouraged us, as I mentioned a moment ago, to cultivate the perception of impermanence. And I think what he's pointing to here is to kind of take in that we, as in this quote from the Mahabharata, that we actually see things. We see impermanence all the time. Take it in. Let yourself acknowledge it. Let yourself let it impact you. Sometimes I think we're afraid to take in this truth of impermanence. There's a lot. It does feel overwhelming, all these things that have been happening. My mind can't hold the scale of it in some ways. And yet, as I reflect on it, it's like my mind feels like it can't quite comprehend the magnitude of it. And yet my heart feels like kind of like it's breaking, and yet it feels open. It's like this reflection on impermanence. What it's especially at the scale that we're seeing here, you know, that the mind often either rebels, it like with the shootings in Las Vegas, it's like, this shouldn't happen, and we need to figure out the gun control, and we need to, you know, this kind of thing goes on in my mind. And there's a kind of, in that, I mean, there is some movement of compassion in that wish that kind of thing didn't happen. And yet there's also a pushing away, a kind of a feeling like, I don't want to deal with that pain that's happening, so I want to figure out how to have not made it happen. Almost like wanting to go back in time and say, how can I make that not have happened? And there's a resistance there. There can be a resistance there to what has happened. And so this opening to impermanence, I mean, the feeling, at least for me, is kind of navigating the sides of like resistance and wanting to resistance, which comes out by wanting to try to figure out how to make it have not happened, and how to kind of almost the action that we spring into at times can be a way to avoid feeling the pain that's there. And or the overwhelm, where we just kind of check out because it's too much. You know, so you know, we may go off on these kind of far edges of the situation. And so, you know, the Buddha encouraged us to cultivate the perception of impermanence, not so that we would shut down, and also not so that we would, you know, just settle back and say, oh, things are impermanent, oh, things as they are. But the heart, my sense of the heart as it opens to this impermanence, as it opens to the magnitude and the suffering that happens, that heart that is open responds with compassion. And so the kind of the movement into action when we see so much suffering, there's the possibility of allowing, touching the suffering to be part of the motivation for action. Not anger at the suffering, not hatred around what's happening, raging at the world, raging at whatever, the NRA. You know, not the raging, being what motivates us into action, but the contact with the suffering, because compassion, the definition of compassion actually is that the open heart, when the open heart meets suffering, there's a kind of a, Jack talks about a quivering in the heart. Jack Kornfield talks about a quivering in the heart. That is the feeling of wanting to act in the face of suffering. And that's a beautiful emotion. And so this opening to impermanence, when we really open to it, we also open to this beautiful quality of compassion, which is a very active emotion. It's not one that just settles back and says, oh, things as they are. It wants to move into action. And so one of the things to explore as we, you know, maybe are trying to spring into action to do something is to take some time to connect with also, to connect with the suffering that is motivating that, or that's a piece of the motivation. One of the things that I've recognized in my practice is how much energy, anger, and hatred, and confusion create and consume. I mean, they create a lot of energy, but they also, like, I think they consume more energy than they create, in a way. That when we are caught up in reactivity, there's a lot of energy kind of spiraling in and reinforcing that reactivity. And so as that kind of reactivity of anger and hatred, you know, the raging around impermanence releases and the heart is more open, well, it's almost as if we see that the anger that was being whirled into the whirlpool of the anger is now freed to flow into the compassion. Our anger, our fear, our confusion, all of those emotions, they have their own story. They have their own kind of delusion that when we're kind of wrapped into those, we're believing the story. We're believing the delusion of those. And some of those, particularly around greed and aversion, wanting things to be a certain way, wanting things not to be a certain way, particularly when we're caught into those stories, those stories have their own kind of narrative, which is something along the lines of getting rid of this thing, fixing this problem for aversion, is how I'll be happy. And the other kind of deeper, almost deeper story in both greed and aversion is that if I didn't experience greed or aversion, I wouldn't do anything. You know, that there's this belief in a way when we're caught by those energies, that they are the motivating forces of life. And as we begin to open to impermanence and allow our heart to be affected, we see there are different kinds of energies that can be motivating. Love is motivating. Compassion is motivating. Generosity, wisdom motivates. And there's a very different experience in the heart when we are motivated by love and compassion than when we are motivated by anger and hatred or desire. And so this reflection on impermanence helps us to get in touch with our relationship to those energies around impermanence, because these fundamental energies of greed and aversion are at play when we are dealing with impermanence. And so reflecting regularly, we don't have to go far to reflect these days. Those of you who have family, friends who've been directly impacted can reflect on that experience that your dear ones that you know are having. And recognizing this in these reflections, I am of the nature to age. And so, you know, we all notice little things around aging. Some of us more than others at certain ages. It's more obvious than others. And to use that as reflection, you know, to use it as, this is again cultivating the perception of impermanence. These additional gray hairs, these spots that are coming all over my body. You know, I'm getting all these age spots. This crooked finger. You know, this is aging. I am of the nature to age. I am of the nature to sicken. I am of the nature to die. One person, Carlos Castaneda, many of you probably have heard of Carlos Castaneda. He was one of my, I could call him a teacher when I was in my 20s, you know, having read his books. And I heard a story relatively recently in the last few years of Carlos Castaneda offering a teaching to somebody at a dinner party. The woman, apparently, person said, I just don't really feel like I know how to have a spiritual life. I don't feel like my life has a spiritual component. And Carlos Castaneda said to her, reflect regularly that you, your children, your parents, your partner, your family, your friends, all are going to die in no particular order. And you will soon have a spiritual life. But pointing to how this works on us. Again, it's a part of what we need to do as we reflect is to look at how we resist this reflection. How do we resist this reflection? And not pushing away the resistance, because that is just another form of aversion, but recognizing, kind of like I saw yesterday, that deluded thought crossed my mind, oh, I've got time. It's like, oh, yeah, no, I don't need to do this today. It's recognizing it, and it's like, wow, okay, this too is here. In the guided meditation today, I was exploring this possibility of relax, receive, allow. That is everything that we allow, open to whatever is happening. And so in turning to a reflection on impermanence, when we see our hearts constricting or closing down or resisting or wanting to turn to something, you know, a fantasy, or turn to thinking about something more pleasant, noticing that, not beating ourselves up about that. This is very human. The story in the Mahabharata, 26, 20, I don't know when the Mahabharata was written. It predates the Buddha, I think. So it's older than the Buddha. The Buddha's 2,600 years old. This tendency that it only enters the surface mind is a human tendency. And so when you reflect on impermanence, even just reflecting on it, you know, it's almost like it enters the surface mind a little bit, maybe. It's harder to let it penetrate more fully. And so noticing what's in the way of it penetrating more fully is part of the practice, is part of opening to what's here around impermanence. And when you are in a situation where you are meeting impermanence directly, in small ways and in large ways. I mean, you can reflect on impermanence, and I would encourage this to be a part of your regular day. You know, I do this on retreats more than I do it at home, but just kind of in my day on retreats, I'm kind of orienting to how things are changing day to day, how things are changing moment to moment. So chopping vegetables, you know, it's like, here's a vegetable in front of you, a zucchini, there it is. It's a thing. And yet, reflecting a little bit on what happened, you know? So, you know, taking any particular object that's an object, food's good around this because it's easier to understand their trajectory. That zucchini didn't exist a year ago. That zucchini probably is no more than a month old, maybe 2 months at most. I hope not that old. You know, the zucchini I purchased at the store, I'd say, I hope it's a couple weeks old. You know, it was a flower. It wasn't a zucchini. It was a flower. It was fertilized. It was, what do they call it when the bees go around? Pollinated. It was pollinated. It was pollinated, so it had the opportunity to grow into a zucchini. It was like a balloon. It wasn't as big as it is now. It grew. You know, so just this reflection. This thing did not exist a month ago. Here it is. A thing now in my mind. And I have a knife. I'm getting ready to chop it up. Chopping it up. It's no longer a zucchini. It's a chopped zucchini. It gets sautéed with tomatoes and onions. It's a cooked zucchini. So still kind of a zucchini in my mind. It's still a zucchini. And then it gets consumed. With each bite, with each chew, where does the zucchini go? What happens to it? It disintegrates. It turns into energy for this body. The waste gets eliminated. Definitely no longer zucchini. So just, you know, just in that, in a simple way, we can reflect on this level of impermanence that's happening. You know, this is still an obvious level of impermanence. And then it can be useful also in reading the news to use that as an impermanence reflection. Exploring the possibility of letting the news touch the heart as you reflect on the stories, the human stories, behind a headline. I saw a headline this morning, 6-year-old San Leandro girl abducted. Whew. Feeling that. You know, that happens. I don't know the statistics on that, but there are a lot of abductions of children in this country. And it happens regularly. Reflecting on the impermanence and the suffering. That impermanence is actually a direct connection to this truth around suffering. Another word for dukkha, the Pali word translated as suffering, is unreliability. That basically there is no experience that is reliable in terms of a place to find lasting happiness. And this is the fundamental mistake that our minds make around greed and aversion, is that we believe, those energies believe that there is something out there or some thing to get rid of out there. That's the way my mind tends to go. It's like the way to navigate happiness in this realm is to get things that I want and to get rid of things that I don't want. And that is where happiness will be found. And that basic understanding is basically in denial that kind of happiness is as unreliable as the things it's relying on. that kind of happiness is as impermanent as the things it is depending on. And so the Buddha actually pointed us to kind of this truth of impermanence, the truth of unreliability, these truths, these are truths, that actually a deeper kind of happiness comes not from trying to navigate the world by trying to get rid of and hold on to these things that are so impermanent and unreliable, but by coming into alignment with these truths, by understanding the truth of impermanence and that things are unreliable, there's a different kind of happiness available, a kind of happiness that's in alignment and connects us to compassion and love in a different way. You know, sometimes, again, from the perspective of greed and aversion cannot fathom that there's a different kind of happiness out there, a different way to be in the world. You know, greed will tell us that, you know, the love that I'm feeling for my family and that the dependence I have on the love, you know, that the neediness around that, and that, you know, it's almost like our minds will tell us that, you know, if I didn't, you know, feel jealous or envious of those loves, or somehow clinging to them, if I didn't cling to that love somehow, that it would, you know, not be real love. Well, the Buddha turns that around and says, you know, actually that kind of love where we're clinging and holding on and feeling envious and jealous, that's not real love. There's a different kind of love that is more open-hearted, that doesn't demand anything, that is in alignment with these truths of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable. And so, exploring this possibility of opening to impermanence. And when we meet it directly, it can have a real impact on our hearts if you allow it to open the heart. This cultivation of impermanence, I think that the part of the cultivation of the perception of impermanence, part of the reason the Buddha encourages us to reflect on it is because it can open the heart. When we're reflecting on it with this interest and curiosity, and curiosity about, well, where am I wanting to not go there? It can open the heart. It opens the heart to compassion and love and joy. At one point, on a retreat, I was just recognizing just this fleeting nature of experience in the world, and tears were streaming down my face as I was meeting this. And it was an odd emotion because it simultaneously included heartbreak and joy. Simultaneously included heartbreak and joy. I mentioned that to my teacher when I got back from the retreat, and he said, we don't have good words for the emotions of impermanence in our language. And bittersweet is poignant. Those are maybe as good as it gets in our language. But you know, the strength of both heartbreak and joy around this truth of impermanence. So in cultivating this perception of impermanence, we open to an emotional side of experience that's a pointer to a different way to be in the world, a different way to be motivated, a different way to act. And so there's that emotional side. And then the fifth of the subjects for frequent recollection is a reflection about, it's basically a reflection about karma. And I'll just have to do a really brief thing on karma right now because I don't have a lot of time and I want to leave some time for comments and discussion here. The reflection on karma, I'll say it and then I'll elaborate a little bit. I'll say it first using the word karma, and then I'll use a word that sometimes karma is translated as. I'm the owner of my karma, born of my karma, heir to my karma, abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I am the heir. I am the owner of my actions, born of my actions, abide supported by my actions. Whatever actions I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. So the teaching on karma is kind of a teaching. I'll simplify it here in terms of this teaching on impermanence. The teaching on karma in some ways points to our relationship to our experience. How we are in relationship to experience creates the conditions for how and why we act. And the Buddha at one point said this. He said, and it's just one place in the suttas that he said this. He said, what I call action, what I call karma, what I call action, because that's the word, karma means action. Just the simple word of acting. What I call action is motivation. Because motivated, one acts. And so he pointed back not just to the action, but to the intention or the motivation behind our actions as being what shapes our hearts and shapes our minds. And so going back to that reflection on acting in the face of suffering and impermanence, you know, we may act out of hatred or anger or frustration in taking action. Or we may act out of compassion. And what the Buddha pointed to is that those motivations that underlie our actions directly shape and influence how our lives unfold. And so if we are acting out of greed, out of anger, out of confusion, out of fear, out of delusion, essentially what it tends to shape, what it tends to condition in our minds, is more greed, anger, aversion, confusion, fear in our minds. And so the reflection, I think, putting the reflection on karma at the end of this reflection on impermanence is kind of an encouragement for us to be curious about our relationship to impermanence. How do we want to act in the face of impermanence? And so this brings in a question that this is a wisdom reflection. You know, this is a reflection on conditionality, on causality, and that the choices that we make affect how our lives unfold. And so the Buddha pointed to, if we act out of greed, aversion, delusion, it tends to create more greed, aversion, delusion in our own hearts. And not only that, it's contagious. It tends to create greed, aversion, and delusion in the world. If we act out of compassion, out of love, out of generosity, out of wisdom, out of kindness, out of concern. It tends to create more of that in our own hearts. And not only that, it's contagious too. It tends to create more of it in the world. In our own experience, what I've seen, it certainly feels in the world as though greed, aversion, and delusion have the upper hand. You know, that love can't quite overcome that in some ways. It feels like that at times. But I definitely have seen in my own experience, in my own recognition of watching these patterns at work in my mind, wisdom and love are more powerful than greed, aversion, and delusion. Ultimately, they are more powerful. Because as the mind and the heart begin to relate to experience in a different way, the mind begins to recognize that greed, aversion, and delusion are not the solution, are not the way to this heart being at ease, being at peace, having a different kind of happiness in the world. And so the mind begins to let go of that direction of greed, aversion, the direction, the heading towards greed, aversion, and delusion, and moves towards kindness, compassion, wisdom. In that reflection on karma, I'm the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, born of my karma. I'm the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions. Abide supported by my actions. We can be supported by our actions. That piece of it is inspiring to me, that we can be supported by our actions. And I do believe in seeing in my own heart and mind that love and wisdom are more powerful than greed, aversion, and delusion. I think it's also possible that love and compassion and wisdom will be more powerful in the world. It's possible. And so this reflection on karma, I think, is pointing us to the wisdom side, basically pointing us to the recognition that, you know, the reflection on impermanence is also a reflection on orienting or aligning with truth. And that is one of the ways I understand wisdom in this teaching, is that much of the time our minds are rebelling against the truth, denying that things are impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, trying to, you know, live our lives in denial of that truth. And wisdom brings us more into alignment with that truth. And so the reflection on impermanence is bringing that kind of wisdom into the mind. This too is impermanent. Just remembering that. And the reflection on karma is kind of a way to remind us, I think, to help us to explore what is our relationship? How are we wanting to act in the face of this impermanence? Can we be curious about our tendencies to repress, to deny, to fight with anger and hatred instead of opening our hearts? And that fighting, you know, that we also have to open our hearts to that fighting. Because as I pointed to, it's human. It's human to fight. And yet, it doesn't have to be our way of navigating the world. The word compassion, one teacher that I teach with, Rebecca Bradshaw, sometimes uses the phrase fierce compassion. That it can have that kind of quality of like, you know, being like a sword, that it just is, this has to, you know, that the heart has to act in this direction because of that compassion. And so this reflection, I offer this reflection on impermanence to support this movement towards both compassion and wisdom. And so I'm curious your thoughts, your reflections on this topic. If there's no particular reflections, then I have a thought to do. We've only got about 7 minutes, and so I'd like to explore a kind of collective reflection, meditation almost. And we'll just start with settling into being present, maybe taking a few longer breaths and just seeing how you are in this moment, what's being felt in this moment. And I'd like you to allow yourself to call to mind any people that you know who are exploring and meeting the suffering side of impermanence. Or have met recently the suffering side of impermanence, whether in personal ways of illness or loss, or in the larger, more catastrophic experiences that we've been hearing about. And seeing if you can hold them in your hearts with openness, feeling how it feels to reflect on this. And I'll invite you to offer the names of the people that you are calling into your mind, into the room, so that we can hold all of them together collectively in this space. Katie. Speaking out.
Jamie.
Susie. and holding all in our hearts. May there be ease. With this experience, the suffering, the struggle, may all beings everywhere, all the beings suffering from loss, all beings suffering from confusion, illness, sickness, devastation, may the suffering be released. May there be ease and peace. May all beings know freedom from suffering. And this reflection is not one of denial, but it is of opening to both the truth of the suffering, of the loss, of the devastation, and the love, the wisdom, the compassion that can be held. Our heart can open to both. May all beings have peace.